This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Here it comes again. Lunch. Will it be the same old, same old? Or are you ready to take a vacation from the ordinary with the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub at Firehouse Subs? Freshly sliced smoked turkey breast, craveably sweet mustard sauce, and a hint of Caribbean seasoning. Just $5.55 for a medium. Save time. Order the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub on the Firehouse Subs app. Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs. Save more lives. Participating locations, limited time only, plus tax. Prices may vary for delivery.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back, everybody, to Wrestling Omakase. It is episode number 70, and I am joined here today by a first-time guest. Welcome to the show, Jasmine.
Hello, everyone. Hello.
It's been a long time since we've had a first-time guest on, so I wanted to start off, first of all, with a little bit of background. I guess just talk about yourself a little bit, especially like how you got started as a wrestling fan, maybe. And then also how you got started as a New Japan fan specifically, since that's today's topic.
Well, a wrestling fan. I've been a wrestling fan since like forever. My parents were huge into wrestling in the 90s with the Attitude Era. My mom still has the biggest crush on The Rock. But like with New Japan, it was the cool internet thing in like 2014. So I just hopped on the bandwagon. I've been here ever since.
Wow, I didn't realize you were that much of a New Japan veteran too. That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
you've been on here there for a while. Yeah. Who are you like really into originally? Like, who was your big New Japan person right away?
Originally,
yeah.
And you're gonna kind of hate me for this. Originally, It was AJ Styles.
It's okay. I mean, look, his New Japan run was good. I can't really sit here and argue with anyone who says it was good.
I don't really care for him now, but something about him then was like super cool, and now he's just like some guy with a bad soccer mom haircut.
I know. I haven't seen a lot of his WWE stuff this year, but what I have seen hasn't been very good. But I know people have told me he's had better matches, like on the TV if you watch it. But
yeah, like I do catch SmackDown sometimes, and usually his matches on TV tend to be better than his pay-per-view matches, which is
Which is really weird. I know. It's like very, like if you just watch the pay-per-view, you'd think he's like fucking terrible now, honestly.
Yeah, honestly.
But yeah. But yeah, 2014, that's definitely a big AJ period. And it's funny because like I, right before I recorded this, like a few days ago, I had just done, Wrestle Kingdom 9, I guess would be the number. The 2015 one that's like Nakamura Ibushi, you know. AJ Naito and Okada Tanahashi. And that's such an awesome show still. Like I got to go back and watch a bunch of that just for like to record that podcast, like on the eggshells thing. So that was really, it was really fun. That's such an awesome show. But yeah, I did watch AJ Naito. So I just saw AJ like in his New Japan element. And even
there
in a match that
really cool about like that whole era of Bullet Club. Like it's changed so much since then.
Yeah, I'm trying to think when it like really started becoming like less and less like interesting. Because that was that whole period where they were like in, I don't know, it still felt kind of special to have them in Ring of Honor too at the same time.
Yeah.
I wonder, because you and I are both local. Were you at the Ring of Honor? Do you go to Ring of Honor New York shows?
I've been to a few.
Did you go to the one, I think the one where Jay Lethal won the Ring of Honor world title, and also it was like AJ and the Bucks against the Kingdom? It was like a terminal, whatever that thing.
No, I didn't go to that one. I had to think about it.
That's a show that I remember pretty well. It's like the Bullet Club feeling special in Ring of Honor still, because like they just had this really wild 6-man tag against like Adam Cole and the rest of the Kingdom. I'm not usually into any of those people, but the 6-man tag still, it was really fun. So
a big Kingdom fan, so I take offense to that.
I don't know anything about the current Ring of Honor, honestly. I mean, I barely watched them this year, but they were okay.
Changed like a lot since then too, because you know.
Yeah, I don't hate Matt Taven or anything. He's just, I find the amount of hate he gets online sometimes is a little bit like.
He's really leaned into it. Like he knows when to be a dick about it, and that's great.
Yeah. Are you going to Final Battle, by the way?
Probably not.
Probably. Yeah, I don't know. I
was completely honest with you.
I have two tickets to it, and I keep going back and forth on whether or not I want to go, but or just unload them. But I think I'm going to go, because now they announced Zack Sabre and Jonathan Gresham, which
sounds that should really be amazing.
Yeah, that sounds really good. So that might be like, that's like my drawing match right now.
Yeah,
so
it would be worth it for that.
Yeah. But yeah, so New Japan, like 2014 into 2015, it's a really cool period. It's a cool period to jump in, I guess. It's a really rare answer, I feel like, 2014. I feel like whenever I ask people this question, like, it's always the two periods I get all the time are like 2013. That was like a real big jump in period, like the 2013 G1, and then if they weren't in then they came in like 2017.
2017 was a big one. Like,
yeah,
a lot of my close friends like really got into it in 2017. Like, you know, Burr got into it in 2017, and we would stay up and watch the 2017 G1. Like, it would be like 5 in the morning Eastern time. It'd be like 10 in the morning for her. It would be up on Rabbit watching live.
Yo, it's not fair at those Euros. They get like such better times than us to watch. Yeah,
like they get to have their morning coffee and watch wrestling.
I know. It's not fair.
Not at
all. But the one they get screwed on though, right, I guess, is the DDT, those noon shows.
Yeah.
Because that would be like 5 a.m. for them. So that's like a little too early.
Yeah.
So, but. But yeah, so that's cool though. 2014. It's just a very rare answer in what I've done these. So that was cool. Who for your New Japan fandom, obviously just mentioned AJ, but like who were some of your favorites, I guess, not up until today?
Well, you know, I feel like Shinsuke is a very obvious answer, especially for anyone who got into New Japan around that time. But like still looking back, everything he did was just so cool in New Japan, and it seems like he lost that like up until recently in WWE.
Yeah.
Kind of sad when you think about it.
I didn't even know he got it back, honestly.
Something about really him paid. Being just like a heel and just like being a jerk about everything is so great. And it's what he needed rather than being just like cool Asian guy.
Yeah. I mean, he definitely felt like he was losing. He didn't have his edge in WWE. Like they got the goofy dancing part down, but like they didn't have the part where he just is supposed to be a badass. So I guess the heel version is closer to that.
Yeah.
But yeah, Shinsuke's a, you know, he was very, very inconsistent, but like when he's on, he's produced some of my favorite matches ever. Like obviously the Ibushi one, but also the G1 final with Tanahashi is another one that in 2015. That's like one of my favorite matches ever.
Mm-hmm. The whole Shinsuke Tanahashi rivalry is like another huge favorite.
Yeah.
I think I've seen almost every single match they've had together, which is a lot.
I really like the one they had the dome for the under 30 title.
That's
that one's really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so early on, and you can like they're just both like babies, but it's such a good match. Yeah.
Baby Tanahashi is so weird because he's like so beefy, but he still looks like a 12-year-old. It's ridiculous.
But yeah, so Shinsuke's a cool answer. And now obviously the reason why I'd originally invited you on here is because, you know, you're obviously a big stan for Evil. It's right there in your Twitter bio. So going up through today. Of course, I figured there'd be no better person for a show where Evil's main eventing.
I just want to preface this by saying I'm not upset. I'm just disappointed.
I heard someone say he's like the new Goto now, and the comparison is becoming very sadly apt.
He's younger Goto. That's it.
Yeah. Where like he can win in he can win in tournaments, basically. But like in these title matches, he never seems to quite get it done. Except, I guess he won the never title from Shibata for like 2 weeks or whatever in Singapore, which still looks so weird. Yeah, it looks so weird. But yeah, before we get into Power Struggle now, I mean, the one thing I noticed when I was looking, you know, I'd already asked you to be on that I saw that you didn't really like the show. So that'll be, I guess, interesting because I thought the show was pretty great. So I guess we'll have to compare and contrast.
We'll get into that.
Yeah. So it opened up. It was Power Struggle, of course, this past Sunday from another sold out Ideon Arena, Osaka. It opened up with an 8-man tag. Ryusuke Taguchi, Chris Sabin, ACH, and Toa Hanare defeating Jushin Thunder Liger, Tiger Mask, Volador Jr., and Silverado Jr. This only went about 6:10, and Taguchi pinned Silverado with the double team Dodon. This was really like nothing. Like there really wasn't anything to this. It was only 6 minutes. It was completely fine. I don't really have a lot to say about it. I don't know if you have anything to say about it, but
I will say New Japan needs, well, every promotion needs a lot more Chris Sabin going into 2019 because he's great. And like Shelley's not around to basically steal the spotlight. So why aren't more people giving it to him?
Yeah, I thought him and Kushida were one of the like sleeper highlights of the junior tag league. They're pretty good, so I like that they had a couple matches I liked. So
they gel together really well.
He's facing Jay Lethal on Friday, I want to say. I can't remember. There's four of these fucking shows. I can't remember which it is, but I know he's facing Jay Lethal in a non-title match in this Ring of Honor Global Wars tour. But I think it's Friday. It might be Thursday, but
it's
either way.
This week.
Yeah, I mean, either way, that could be good.
Most likely.
Match number two, a 6-man tag team match. The Bullet Club OGs, Tama Tonga, Tonga Loa, and Robbie Eagles. Actually, I guess you could just say Bullet Club now. I have to get in that habit after calling them the OGs for like the past 4 months. They defeated Togi Makabe, Tomoyaki Homma, and Kushida. 7:39, Tama Tonga pinning Kushida with the gun stun. Before we get into the match, actually, do you have any opinions? Because you brought it up before about the Bullet Club, you know, being cool at one point and maybe not being cool anymore. What do you think of what the OGs slash, I guess now just Bullet Club, like, what do you think of that effort
I think it's a step in the right direction because Bullet Club was supposed to be like cool, badass foreigners, not a bunch of goofy white dudes.
They're supposed to be heels, first of all. Yeah. I'm glad you said, because I actually agree. I feel like it's kind of a hot, it might be kind of a hot take, but I think the Jay White / G.O.D. Bullet Club, you know, they fit the actual original theme of the unit a lot better than the elite version that we've had for the past few years. So indeed. I'm not saying I'm running out to buy a t-shirt or anything, but it is a lot more, I think, a lot more fun and a lot more close to the spirit of the unit. So
I will say one thing that I've noticed on Twitter.com, I've got complaints, is I've seen people calling Jay the new leader of the Bullet Club. He's like nowhere near the leader of the Bullet Club. He's just a white guy.
He claims he's not
only claim to fame here.
He claims he's not the leader too. So I don't know, but yeah, I mean, there was that during that whole original Bullet Club, it wasn't really clear if Carl Anderson or Devitt was the leader. So I guess if you go with that again, where it's like, you could be like, is Tom the leader? Is Jay White the leader?
I don't know if you heard. There's no leader, like how L.I.J. says they don't have a leader.
Yeah, that's true. Have you heard the rumors about Tanahashi joining?
No.
This is on the Super J Cast. Shout out to them on this same network. But one of the hosts mentioned on this past week's show that they got it from a pretty good source that steered them correctly in the past, that that's something that's being talked about, at least, or in the works, is to do a Tanahashi heel turn and join the Bullet Club, which is one of those ideas that when you first hear it, just it sounds so insane that you're just like,
I can't even, like, my brain can't even comprehend any of that.
I mean, that's basically where I'm at. When I heard that one too, I was like, what would that even be? But yeah, Tanahashi. So the one part that makes me think maybe, I mean, there's two things, honestly, that would make me think maybe it's true. First of all, Tanahashi has actually talked repeatedly, like apparently on his podcast and stuff, and what I understand, that he wants to do like a real heel run before he retires.
Yeah.
So that's a factor. And the other factor is, let's say the elite guys are gone, or most of them, or something, and that's why they're moved out of Bullet Club. Maybe they think that like Jay White and the people there isn't strong enough to, like, you know, keep the t-shirt sales going, basically, and they need something really big to, like, make sure the brand stays hot, and that's this Tanahashi thing. But I don't know, it would be so crazy. Like, it's such a crazy idea that I'm just like,
that would make so many things so much more interesting, because, you know, Jay versus Tanahashi has been like the big rivalry he's had since he returned from his excursion. So, like, how would that work with them being in the same room?
I almost wonder if it would be like, so to compare it to something that happened in Toryumon in like 2004, when Masaki Mochizuki was supposed to be retiring. That was the idea. Crazily enough, that was supposed to be the idea in 2004, that he was supposed to be retiring soon. He said he wanted one last heel run before he retired, so he turned heel and joined Agan Izu. But the heel turn only lasted about 6 months before he, like, went back babyface. So I almost wonder if the idea would be Tanahashi turns heel, it's a big shock thing. He joins Bullet Club, big shock thing. But it's really just to set up Tanahashi and Jay White again, maybe for the following year at the Dome in 2020 or something. And, you know, you just have the two of them, you know, coexist in the unit the same way like Okada and Jay White did this year, and maybe tease a little tension at some point, and then, you know, then they all kick Tanahashi out and he goes back babyface.
Yeah.
I feel like it could be something like that, just a spitballing. But yeah, so that's a interesting rumor that we'll see, I guess. Like I said, when I first heard it, it was so insane that I wasn't even sure, honestly, what to make of it. But the more I thought about it, the more I was like, maybe there's something to this. But back to this match here. First of all, Taiji Ishimori was out there on crutches, you know, which he was moving okay, and he would even get involved in the finish. So it's good news that he's not more seriously injured. He just had, like, apparently, I think it was a left ankle injury during the tour. So this was okay. I thought there was a really cool spot where Kushida blocked the gun stun from Tama Tonga, like right into an armbar. That looked pretty cool. And then towards the finish, like Jado got involved. Kushida kicked out of the kendo stick roll up at two. Ishimori comes in and hits him with a crutch and leads to Tama hitting the gun stun with a pin. I basically just had it written down. It was boring, kind of boring early, but after the hot tag, it was like, I thought it was pretty fun, leading into like a really fun finish. And then Ishimori continues attacking Kushida after the match, raises up the junior title belt. So clearly, as we would find out for sure a few days later, that is the junior title match at the Tokyo Dome. What'd you think of this one?
Well, the only thing, like my only note to that match were like, only thing that matters is the finish, which really is like the rest of the match. It could have been anyone out there as long as that finish happened.
Yeah.
But my big thing is kind of depend. I'm thinking beyond the match already, where my sort of prediction going into 2019 is that Ishimori wins the junior title and his first defense would be against Hiromu, who's supposed to be coming back soon. I don't know if you heard about
that. Yeah, he said 85%, right?
But he said like a number of days, not even like a little bit over a month he was supposed to be coming back.
That's crazy.
But I'm thinking that like this has to be some sort of setup as a rematch for the final of Best of the Super Juniors.
Yeah, which is my match of the year, so I'd be very pleased with that. But yeah, I mean, like you said, I think the finish was the most important part. Then we got into match number three, Okada and Beretta defeating Jay White and Bad Luck Fale. This also went very short, only 4:32. Beretta actually pinned Fale with a Hurricanrana roll up, I guess you could say. I mean, that was a pretty stunning finish. By far the biggest pin I think Beretta's ever gotten as a heavyweight, even though it was a flash pin. But maybe I almost made me wonder if they're tipping their hand a little bit with the US title. But I guess that it just feels like for him to get a pin that big, maybe he might be winning it. But, you know, I'm not really sure. But yeah, I thought the highlight of the match was right at the start where Okada hit that huge dive to the floor, like as soon as he hit the ring, and Chuck Taylor on commentary just yelled, "Beat that ass," which I thought was the best part of this by far. But yeah, that was pretty much it. And, you know, it was a really wild brawl, and I like the Okada-White feud. It's continued building that pretty well. Obviously, it only went 4.5 minutes, so not a ton else you can say about it, though.
Okay. Going into this match, I for sure thought Beretta was going to turn on Okada. I thought this was it.
You thought he was the mole, I guess.
Yeah, and like I wasn't the only one who thought this. Like a lot of people were going into that match saying, like, okay, Greg's for sure going to turn on Will Kaiser, right? And like he didn't do it. Yeah. So I'm wondering, like,
maybe there is no mole. Maybe Jay was being
asked. Liger said he knows who the mole is, and it was somebody in that match.
Wait, who said that? Liger?
Yeah, on commentary, apparently.
Oh, wow, that's crazy.
So it was someone in that match, allegedly.
Allegedly. Who the fuck else could that be then? I don't know.
Money is on Beretta.
Okay, so it could still be Beretta, I guess we'll say. Then we have match number four, Kenny Omega gracing us with his presence on the store here. Teaming with Kota Ibushi to defeat Hiroshi Tanahashi and David Finlay in 9:47. Ibushi pinning David Finlay with the golden trigger. Before we get into the match, what are your thoughts on the Tanahashi-Omega feud so far?
I think this highlights how, like, a lot of foreigners in Japan rely on laziness to get heat. Like, if Tanahashi's working an entire tour and he's, like, he's got, like, a good almost decade on you, you have no excuse to, like, not show up for it. And then just say, well, I'm too good for you. Like,
I'm busy on my boat.
You're like, you're just some Canadian dude with bad hair. Like, you're not special, my guy. Kenneth Jerome Omega should be showing up to more of these shows. That's my opinion on this whole feud, is that like he should be showing up more.
Yeah, I mean, that's a complaint. I think I really hate the, I don't know, I'm just like, when I watch a wrestling show, I just want to hear two guys like talk about how they're going to beat the other guy because they're better. I don't want to hear two guys talk about how like my style of wrestling is better than yours and your style of wrestling is makes like, me sad. Like it honestly feels like one of those kind of things where like if WWE did this, like people would complain a lot, and justifiably, I think it would deserve complaints. But New Japan does it and people just kind of like give them a pass on it. I don't really understand why.
Yeah. I would say like a big thing is I think Kenny Omega gets a pass on a lot of things that like guys who, if they weren't him, would be torn to shreds by people on the internet.
Yeah, I agree.
Like how Lesnar doesn't show up for big events. Like neither does Omega half the time. Yeah. And no one talks about that. But everyone has a problem with Brock not showing up for a pay-per-view.
Yeah, I mean, it is hypocritical by some people. But yeah, I mean, as far as the actual match goes, I mean, the other thing I want to say about the Kenny not showing up thing, because I heard again on Super J-Cast and some other people saying, well, you know, what does it matter if Kenny doesn't show up on these tours? I mean, the problem isn't necessarily that Kenny being there would make these shows, like, so much better if he's just in a random tag. The problem is more like when you're watching these Corkin shows and Kenny's not there and Tanahashi is like in a tag match against Kota Ibushi playing Kenny stand-in, it just feels like really fucking dumb. Like,
yeah,
it like, just feels really...
It feels, you know what it feels like? Like the perfect metaphor for this. It's like Tanahashi's been talking to a brick wall.
Yeah.
And somewhere on the other side of that wall is Kenny Omega.
Like the Wrestle Kingdom build is like Tanahashi feuding with himself. Because Kota Ibushi doesn't... Kota doesn't have any problem with Tanahashi. And he's, if you watch those post-match promos, he's like, why am I here? Like, why am I fighting Tanahashi? Like, that's pretty much the entire promo. I don't know. It's just really, like, that's to me is the biggest issue. Is it just makes those shows feel really, very hollow. And I don't feel any buzz for the Tanahashi Omega match. It's not like there's that many shows to build it up at this point. I mean, you have World Tag League, where the focus will be on the World Tag League. And you have two Korakins, who the fuck knows? Like, is Kenny going to be on those shows? Maybe, maybe not. At this point, who even knows? And then you have the Road to Tokyo Dome Korakins, which are only two shows, and that's it. Then it's the Dome. There's really it's not a lot of time to really make this feud feel bigger, important. And to me, so far, it does not. Like, I think we can talk a little bit after the show about like the card so far, but like to me, it's one of my least anticipated matches of the card.
True.
As far as this match, the first thing there was like a really goofy exchange at the start where like Kenny and Tana were both just like avoiding each other repeatedly. I thought looked pretty goofy. One thing I noticed too, if you look at the gear, like with Finley had these, I think these pants were new, right? These like really black pants.
I don't remember him. Like he's worn them like at least once before, but it was on like some B show no one was watching for some reason.
Okay, so they're rare then. It's not new.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, like with him wearing those black pants and Kota wearing his normal gear, like if you just looked, you'd probably think Ibushi was with Tana and Finley was with Kenny. I don't know if that was on purpose. It was, you know, if that's like setting something up or something. That's really funny, but I don't think it was.
One can hope. Hashtag dump him.
Finley looked good here, I thought, after it looked like the CMLL tour kind of like rejuvenated him, I thought.
But. Yeah, like it seemed like, I don't know, it seemed like over the last couple of months, like since he got actual gear, he's kind of lost some, I don't know if it's steam or if he's just got like something going on in his life that he doesn't want to talk about, but he seemed a little out of it. And I think like going to Mexico, he came back rejuvenated.
Yeah, he looked more like locked in, maybe.
Yeah.
And then they hit the golden trigger on Finley for the pin. It was fine, I guess, the best thing I can say about it.
Yeah.
After that, we moved into the three-way Super Junior Tag League 2018 final. Sho and Yo defeating Desperado and Kanemaru and Shingo and Bushi. Sho pinning Desperado in 1555 with the Shock Arrow. I thought this was quite good. The booking we'll talk about in a second didn't really make any sense. But the match itself, you know, just starting off with Desperado doing a really awesome tope, like all the way into the announcers over the rail. The crowd was like surprisingly not that into it at first, but then Shingo came in and like cleaned house on everyone, and the crowd really got into that. And then Shingo had another really fun exchange with Sho. And then we had like the very involved finish with Roppongi 3K hitting the 3K on Shingo, Kanemaru pulling out the ref, Desperado hits Sho with the belt, tags himself in, and then he gets his move on Sho for two. Bushi missed Desperado. Yo ducks the whiskey spit and wipes out Kanemaru and Bushi with a huge dive. Sho hits the powerbomb lung blower. That almost looked like it broke his spine, the powerbomb lung blower. Like, the landing was really bad. And he hit that on Desperado for two and then hit the shotgun and got the pin. Yeah, so I thought it started pretty, like, quiet and slow, but got really good towards the finishing stretch. I don't think you do star ratings, but I had this at, like, 3 3/4. So very good match, but I was a little surprised Bushi didn't get pinned. And then once they revealed why, I was a little infuriated, but we can talk about that when we get to the Tokyo Dome card. But yeah, I don't know. What'd you think of this?
My big takeaway from this, and like, this is like a genuine question, like for anyone, I want genuine answers to this. Feel free to at me on Twitter at Big Sad Boy. That's boy with two eyes. Did Sho and Yo really need to win another Super Junior Tag League?
Probably not.
It's like, it seems like there's no point. Like, they're established. They've been champions. They do well, like, in singles matches. I just don't think they needed this win. Like, I think it would have served Kanemaru and Desperado a lot better to win. It would have served Bushi and Shingo a lot better to win than it did Sho and Yo. And that kind of, like, it's kind of sat with me since then. Like, yeah, the match was good, but, like, what did we accomplish at the end?
Yeah. And of course, we find out the Dome is just going to be a three-way again. It is really like, what did we accomplish at the end? I mean, that was the most bizarre announcement in a while. Because it's like, well, why do we have this tag league if the winners don't even get a straight-up title shot? I mean, I know they've done this before, but it's been stupid when they did it then, too. So,
you know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of those never-ending three-way tags for the heavyweight belt last year.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling it's going to end up just like that, to the point where it's like, even the people in the matches are going to be like, please stop putting us in these stupid three-way matches.
Yeah, so you meant the heavyweight tag belts, right? With
yes.
Yeah, Killer Elite Squad, G.O.D., and God, who the fuck was the third team? Oh,
I wanted to say War Raiders, but it's War, yeah. It's a War Machine veteran. Yeah.
I forgot they existed, so there you go. But yeah, this is it's really, really weird that we're going to that three-way match, and I guess we'll see what happens. But not, you know, like, I remember the Voice Wrestling account just asking, like, what did they actually win? What did Roppongi actually win? And my answer was they won two big trophies.
They won the same exact trophies they had last year.
Like, well, you know, maybe they start in a trophy case now. I don't know. But yes, after that, we have the never open weight title, Taichi losing to Goto in 15:02, the GTR. Okay. If I'm going to complain about the booking on this show, this is going to be the big one for me. Why in God's name did Hiroki Goto need to win this belt back? Do you have any
answers? I see people saying that, like, oh, they wanted to keep Goto strong and losing to Taichi made him look weak. I'm like, first of all, don't respect the Holy Emperor like that. Taichi is the greatest wrestler who has ever lived and ever will live, and he deserves that belt a lot more than a washed up old samurai.
All right, well, then don't get too mean about Goto. But no, I just, look, you watched that Korakuen, right? When Goto came out and challenged him?
Yes.
We all have ears, right? We can hear the crowd chanting, let's go Taichi. Like, yeah. That's something they're doing. That's not something, because I know there's a lot of Taichi haters on Twitter, okay? I know that a lot of you hate Taichi, and that's fine. But like, Jasmine and I and all the other Taichi fans, we're not making that up. The crowd is chanting for him. That's a thing that's happening.
Exactly. So. And it's like, people claim that, like, Ghetto and everyone listens to the audience. But if you listen to your audience, then Taichi would be, like, the president of the company by now.
It's true. So there was a Let's Go Tag Team chant right away in this match, first of all. So that started right off the bat. And I have to give a shout out to Kevin Kelly, whose explanation for Tai Chi was so great. He just said, quote, "Nothing in his life is ever good enough for him. He treats everything that could be important with disdain. He goes through life with a perpetual sneer on his face. I couldn't stop Tai Chi better, and that's why I love him." So shout out to Kevin Kelly. Chucky T then also adds that he's, quote, "basically a weird theater goth kid who learned karaoke." Who learned karate. He did learn karaoke too, actually.
He learned both of those things, which makes him even better.
But yes, and that also kind of sums up why I love Tai Chi, so there you go. So he dropped, this match basically is one of these matches where Goto's like, I'm going to pretend, well, this time he's like, I'm going to be pretend unconscious. Not like the dome where he's like, hey, Minoru Suzuki, just like legitimately choke me unconscious so I can like recover slowly in this wrestling match, which is still one of the craziest things we've ever seen. But yeah, so Tai Chi drops him on his head with a backdrop like right before the bell. They sell that he's completely out. Goto, to his credit, he does a great job selling that he's out, and Tai Chi just like, you know, toss him around the chairs. Goto just barely beats the 20 count. There's still really loud Let's Go Tai Chi chants anytime someone tries to start the Tai Chi Go Home chants. And then here's where the problem, and where I think the issue with this match is, honestly, is the crowd simply was not into Goto's comebacks, like, at all. And this is where it felt like, you know, if you were matching Tai Chi up against, like, a hot babyface and, like, someone who the crowd really wanted to see win the NEVER title, maybe someone who hasn't had the belt for, like, the better part of 2 years, for instance, you probably would have had a really great match here because the structure was good, and I thought Tai Chi was good in his role, but, like, the crowd just did not care at all about Goto's comebacks. Like, just dead silent, almost, for Goto's comebacks. And you need somebody, you need the crowd to react to that, obviously. It's the entire, like, base of the match. They did finally get a little more into it towards the end. Tai Chi got a low blow and a cradle for two, and the crowd was actually more into it, I thought, when he was on offense. And then we got the dueling chance again. The last drag got two, and Tai Chi, you know, just kind of lost to Goto. I don't know. Like, Goto just kind of fired up, hit the GTR, 1, 2, 3. You know, I went 3.5 on it. I still liked it. But, yeah, I mean, like, it's pretty clear they just went to the well 1 too many times with Goto. And I feel bad being too critical because I know this wasn't the original plan. You know, it was supposed to be Ospreay here. But, like, it's still, like, they could have done something else than this. And they could have had Tai Chi retain. So I can still criticize them a little bit because, yeah, this was not good.
I will say, if Tai Chi had lost to Ospreay instead, I would have thrown a fit. Like, a fit you've never seen before.
I mean, maybe it's good that it didn't happen then, because I think that was probably going to be the finish. So.
Yeah. So I'd rather it be Goto, who I know is, like, good hands, and I don't have to look at Ospreay until he comes back. So yeah. I can't be too mad about it, but at the same time, it also feels like, why go back to Goto? Like, you do not have anybody else you could temporarily put this belt on who's not Tai Chi or Goto.
It's really weird. It's like, why do we need this?
And it's,
like,
supposed to be an open weight belt. So why couldn't Tai Chi, like, as a way of, I don't know, saying that he's better than all of those juniors he used to be and have had a junior challenge for the belt?
Well, I mean, that was his original idea. I mean, he said that over the, if he had won the title the first time, he said he was going to only defend against juniors.
Yeah, and so, like, Ospreay had declared he was a heavyweight, like, a week before he got injured. I don't know if anybody remembers this, but it's like a thing that happened.
I didn't even know that. So
he said it, like, on Twitter, I believe. He's like, I'm a heavyweight now.
Why? Can I ask why half of New Japan's big storylines are happening on Twitter?
I found out that the Elite left the Bullet Club on Twitter.
So did everybody else. And it's like, what the fuck? That was the greatest thing, by the way. I had a tweet that went, like, semi-viral because the five Elite members are six or whatever the fuck. Who cares? They're on Chris Jericho's Boat podcast. And they announced that they were no longer the Bullet Club. They're just the Elite now. And I just made a joke. I was like, for people who, yes, if you weren't aware, folks, because if you weren't aware that the Bullet Club Civil War storyline has really been going on since the Kenny Cody thing in February, so all year long in New Japan, It ended on a boat, if you're not aware. And I have like one woman like quote to me and be like, actually, it ended when Cody said it on Twitter a week before. And I was like, how is that any better?
Like, that's no, I would prefer the boat. The boat seems like a bigger like deal than just Cody said it on Twitter like 3 days ago and you just missed it.
Look, they all said on Twitter, John, because they all said this was their final Bullet Club t-shirt design. I'm like, oh, wow, that's a much better ending. Them being like, please buy our t-shirt. And also, the Bullet Club
split. I wouldn't know because half of the elite blocked me on Twitter. Hashtag unblock me, young bucks. I told them this in person. I was like, both of you have me blocked on Twitter. And I've never said anything to either of you.
They both have me blocked on Twitter, too. So it's not very exclusive club, I guess.
I will go to my many alternate accounts. As some of you found out when I was temporarily banned from Twitter earlier this year, I have like 5 other accounts.
Yeah,
I will go to my many other accounts and complain.
I just use the Omakase account to look at anybody who has been blocked. So for some reason, nobody ever thinks to do that. Like when they block me, I'm like, you know, I have 2 podcast accounts like right in my profile. So if you really don't want me to see your tweet, you should probably block those too.
Same, like, you know, I have my history blog that I've updated once and never updated again because I'm terrible, right in my bio. And I can go right on that one and read all of the Young Bucks tweets, which I'm going to do out of spite.
But anyway, yeah, so it fucking sucks that Taiji lost the title. I don't know how he got on the Bullet Club. But all right, the next match, the British heavyweight title, Tomohiro Ishii against Minoru Suzuki. Ishii retains the title in 1921 with the Brainbuster. This is where the show really picked up for me. I mean, it was just a, you know, I don't want to say an average show, but it was like a, you know, just a I do want to say an average show. Kind of just an average show up to this point. But this is where, like, you know, I like the, you know, pure rescue violence, the people beating each other senseless, and this definitely gave me that. You know, they went right at each other right at the bell. It was very, very physical. Ishii started doing his like brutal chops to the throat that just looked worse than almost anything else in wrestling. There was like this crazy elbow strike exchange that just ended with Ishii collapsing. He no-sold 2 PKs, one to the front, one to the back, which I thought was crazy. And there was like a really cool exchange where he like countered a sleeper into like this aborted backdrop, which then went into a front suplex, only for Suzuki to counter. And Ishii lariat right after into his drop kick. You can always tell. I think Super J Cast said this too. I don't want to steal their take, but I guess I am stealing their take. You can always tell when Suzuki's like really into a match when he throws that drop kick. Because like, yeah, if he does not throw that drop kick, he doesn't give a shit. And you know, he's 50. You know, he's a fucking grandpa. I mean, it's not, it must be hard for him to get up that high. But like, when he really is into a match, he throws that drop kick, and it's always awesome. But yeah, Ishii countered the Gotch into like this really sick reverse pile driver, and it finally pins him with the Brainbuster. So yeah, I went 4.25 on this. I thought it was really awesome. I thought they went a little bit too long at the end and almost like kind of lost the crowd. Very like they came close to losing the crowd, but I took maybe like a 0.25 off for that. But this is still like a pretty much exactly the kind of like really hard hitting awesome match you'd expect. What do you think of this one?
Oh, we'll say I'm no Suzuki pervert like some of you on Twitter.com, but like another way to tell when he's really into a match, and a lot of you are going to hate me for pointing this out, is like he'll straight up start like licking his fingers like some kind of weird horny murder beast. And he did that a lot in that match. So I think there's very horny big things to come out of this rivalry. Like, not that there hasn't been big things coming out of it, no pun intended, for a while now, but like I can see this rivalry going on at least until Mania weekend. Because yeah, Pro does have a big show in New York that weekend.
Yeah. I mean, that'd be pretty cool. I wonder if they could even do something at MSG. That'd be awesome.
That would be great.
Yeah. I assume you're going to that, right?
I am. That was the first thing I bought tickets for. I bought tickets for that in like August.
Yeah, I did too. I have tickets to that too. I bought them right away. But I don't know. Do you have like a Mania weekend planned yet?
Kind of. I bought the VIP package for the WWN Live thing because I'm an idiot. And I like spending all of my days inside a cheap nightclub in Queens that has really good tacos. If you're going to be at La Boom, for Mania weekend, please try the tacos. They're really good.
I didn't quite buy the package, but I still bought a bunch of, I have, like, I'll be there all day Thursday. I have Evolve, WXW, and DDT, and I have the Super Show on Friday.
I wanted to go see Shine, because I actually went to, like, a Shine show. This was a couple of years ago, and I really enjoyed it, but I haven't been to one since.
Shine, I think it's Shimmer, not Shine.
Shine, one of them, too.
Yeah.
My memory is not
as good. It's okay. It's confusing because Shine is the WWN women's promotion, but for some reason, Shimmer is the one that runs that weekend. So I don't know.
Shine's running on, like, I think they're running on the Saturday or the Friday, one of those two.
Yeah. Well, Shimmer is running the Friday. I know that. So.
And it's the Saturday.
Yeah. And Shimmer, I think. Shimmer's the one I was thinking of going to, but it's just going to depend on if they bring in anybody I really like. Like, if they bring any, like, okay, Maki Ito's already confirmed for the weekend. If Maki Ito's on a Shimmer show, then I'm going to Shimmer. Like, that's not even a thing. Or if, like, Miyu Yamashita, or, like, even if they bring over, like, other Joshi, then I
they need to bring Saki Akai, but as Saki Sama.
Yes,
I don't wonder if she's not wearing the goth outfit.
That would be awesome. I miss Saki Sama. R.I.P. Saki-sama. Come back to us.
Back to France.
I know. She needs to come back to Japan. And then America, too.
True.
Did you like the match? So I feel like we never got to that part.
Oh, yeah. I liked the match. I mean, I was very distracted by how horny the match was and unable to process a lot more besides that.
Okay. The semi-main event, Tetsuya Naito defeating Zack Sabre Jr. in 2012 with the Destino. This was awesome, I thought. They've had three matches this year. The first one, the New Japan Cup match, I did not like at all, actually. I wasn't really into it at all. The second one, the G1 match. The G1 match, like, I gave, you know, when it happened, I was, like, just so fucking angry that Naito got eliminated. I couldn't really appreciate it. I didn't go back and watch it until... someone basically told me when I was listing, I guess, all these awesome Naito matches from this year, towards the end of September. And someone was like, how do you not have the Zach G1 match on there? And I was like, I don't know. I don't remember being that good, but I was really, like, blind with rage at the time. And they were just like, well, you have to go back and watch it. So I went back and watched it again. And I was like, oh, actually, this match was like 4.5 stars and was fucking amazing. I just was too angry to even notice, apparently. So, yeah, so the second one was awesome. This one, I wouldn't go that high. I only went 4.25, but it was close. I thought Naito did a really cool job keeping up with Zach on the mat early on, even though he also just made it clear that Zach was better. I just thought, you know, Naito doesn't get a chance to show that he can do that kind of mat wrestling very often in New Japan, and he's actually, like, better at it than you probably expect for somebody who never gets to do it. At one point, Naito did, you know, his pose in the middle of the ring, and Zach grabbed him out of the pose right into a triangle, which is pretty awesome. The match, like, slowed down around the time of, like, this count-out tease. But then Naito did this, like, mini comeback with basically that spot he does in the corner all the time with the ends of the dropkick. Zach, like, countered it at first, so Naito had to find, like, a second way to hit it, which is, like, a pretty cool little sequence. And then Zach, like, rolled through the Naito top rope Rana, like, right into submission, which was really cool. Zach kicked out a running Destino, which everybody kicks out of now. And then he tried to reverse a regular one into a pin. Naito, like, sat down on that to get the flash pin attempt, but I thought actually would have been the finish for a second. It was a great near fall, only got two. Zach turned that into his signature cradle that he pinned Evil with a couple times. And Naito managed to kick out of that again. Naito went for the Destino. Zach countered to the Zach driver. Naito countered that into, like, this crazy, like, head drop. It was, like, sort of like a Northern Lights bomb, basically. That was really cool. And then finished him off with the Destino. Yeah, I thought this was a really, really awesome match. 4.25 stars. Really enjoyed it. What'd you think, Jasmine?
I think, like, one thing, like you were saying, people forget how good Naito is when it comes to stuff on the mat. Like, one thing people tend to overlook, he was trained by Animal Hamaguchi. Like, this is a guy who knows how to mat wrestle.
Yeah,
but
good point.
I think people have become, he's become more synonymous with, like, the more lucha brawler type of style. Like, he sort of morphed into Roosh 2.0 at this point. And people forget like what he's actually good at on his own.
Yeah.
And I think this was like a perfect match to show what he can do really in his own style. Because if you look at old Naito matches, like he was wrestling like that before.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you go back to like 2011, and as early as that, like that Naito Nakamura G1 final. Like he's Naito's like on the mat the entire time, basically, and it's really good.
Yeah. So like the match was, I wouldn't say like I don't want to make it sound like I didn't like the match, because I did like the match. I just don't think it was as good as their prior engagements, and maybe it's just because I wasn't as invested as in this match as I was in either of the previous ones. Because I don't know, I'm still a little peeved that we never got to see Zach versus Evil because of Jericho, and like my heart was so set on that match that it's like. The whole match with Naito, like, what's the point? Like, I understand you can't fight Evil because he's in the main event, but, like, why do you need to fight Naito? What's there for you to gain?
Yeah, I mean, it almost felt like magnanimous by Zach taking this match and letting Naito have a third shot at beating him when, like you said, they had nothing to gain, which I don't know. I mean, it's weirdly magnanimous for a heel. So, I mean...
Yeah, that's a stupid baby face move. Like, you're not supposed to take things that don't have any positives for you.
Yeah. No, I definitely see your point there. The main event, the IWGP Intercontinental title match, Chris Jericho defending against Evil, successfully retaining in 2140 with the Walls of Jericho. First of all, I think we definitely have to talk about Evil's light spinner. That made like a pentagram. Like
when it ruled.
When he started spinning that thing, I was like, that is the coolest fucking thing. Like, I don't know how the fuck. I don't know where they got this. Like, how do you just walk into like a prop, your like prop department and be like, okay, I want a light up spinning pentagram? It's like, what a weird request. But
you know, like, no lie, I have a load of friends who are like super into the rave scene, and that's like a thing. Like, you can like buy them and customize them. I'm telling you, Evil is a secret raver.
Okay, well, there you go. I'm glad you're here to educate me. I learn something new every day.
That's where he's getting these lasers from.
Before we talk about the match itself, I want to say I think they missed a huge opportunity here. I think Evil should have won. And first of all, I don't think it would hurt Jericho at all. He's Chris Jericho. Like, there's no way it could have hurt him. I think you can still do Jericho Naito at the Dome. There's no reason why you can't still have Naito go for revenge and get his one back on Jericho. And you would add another big singles match to the Dome with Evil defending the Intercontinental title, probably maybe against Zach, who, you know, needs a match as well, and we still need to do that match. So, yeah, I mean, I predicted Jericho in the end in the preview, but I laid out that scenario where, like, Evil wins, Evil defends against Zach, and you still do Jericho Naito, which I think would have made a lot of sense. And I'm a little bit disappointed they didn't, you know, they frankly didn't have the balls to pull the trigger on it. So that's my take on that. I assume you would agree with me.
Yeah, I mean, I say this a lot, but like, even though I rip on Jericho constantly for looking like a dumbass most of this year, he's still like my favorite wrestler of all time. So like, personally, I don't think, like, he wouldn't be in a worse position if he didn't have the Intercontinental belt, but everyone else is in a worse position because he has it.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, like, I just don't see why they wouldn't have gone with Evil. I think somebody in the office just doesn't like him. I think that's what it is.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, I don't think it's quite like that. I just think it's like they view him as this generation's Goto, and... Yeah.
I don't look at him and like you can tell like he could do more than what they're letting him do.
I agree.
It's like you have a badass necromancer and you have him losing to somebody's dad wearing skinny jeans in a ring.
I feel like in New Japan there always is like, I don't know, like the generations kind of echo each other, and like, you know, Evil is this echo of Goto, and Goto before that you probably would compare him to like Manabu Nakanishi, who won a bunch of tournaments. He did, although Nakanishi did win the IWGP title, but it was almost like a brass ring title, and it was very brief. But You know, before Nakanishi, maybe you could say, like, I don't know, Strong Machine or somebody. But, like, it feels like they always have some, like, beefy dude with a Cravely likes who wrestles a powerhouse style and, like, really, like, you know, can win any time, especially in, like, tournaments in the G1, but, like, can never quite get the job done in, like, the big main event title match. Like, it feels like that's a New Japan trope. So, I don't know. I think it's pigeonholing Evil to put him in that spot, but that feels like that's his spot.
Yeah, and my other big, well, it's not really a complaint, because, like, back to the match, I liked the match. I didn't think it was a bad match. Like, I don't think I've ever seen either Chris Jericho or Evil really have a bad match, and I'm including Evil's match with Yoshihashi from the G1, which was not great, but it wasn't bad. But, like, I don't know, like, what's the point? Like, just looking at it, it's just like, what's the point?
Yeah, I mean, it was just to kill time for Jericho, I guess.
Like, if you go further with this program and have Naito challenge Jericho, it's like, why would he want this belt back?
I know, well, that's the big question.
He literally tried to destroy this belt, like, five different times. Why would he want it back?
I mean, I believe me, I definitely agree with you there. It doesn't really make any sense that he want this stupid belt back. But yeah, the match, I really liked the match a lot. And I think, you know, it was Jericho to me is 2 for 3 because I didn't like this quite as much as the Naito match. The Naito one I went 4.5 on. This I only went 4 flat, which is still a very, very good match, obviously. Mm. I did not like the Omega one at all, though.
I feel like I was kind of in the minority, at least from what I saw, of like people who, I'm not really a big Kenny Omega fan. I don't know if I've made that clear at any point in this show. I'm not a big fan of his style of wrestling in general, but I actually really liked that match because I feel like Jericho pushed him out of what sort of become his comfort zone.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, like, I don't, a million V triggers.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's definitely true. He definitely did not spam the V trigger 1,000 times. It was too slow and, like, it felt very WWE to me, which is just not what I want when I'm watching a New Japan show. Whereas, like, Jericho came out, like, that Naito match to me felt like Jericho having, like, a lucha brawl, which that was, like, you know, when's the last time Chris Jericho had a lucha brawl, you know? So it's like that to me was, like, super interesting and super, you know, super, like, really, really fun. Here, it was almost like in between. And this to me was, like, the most New Japan style of Jericho's three matches. Like, it felt much more in line with that, with the house style, than he's felt in the last two.
Yeah,
and I don't think that's a negative at all. I think, you know, I think he's adjusting to it, and I think it really worked. But yeah, this to me was, like, the most New Japan-esque of the three matches. Jericho seemed to like it a lot.
Yeah, that speaks a lot to Jericho's sort of ability to adapt. Like, he's really been like a chameleon over the past almost 30 years, where if you look back, it's like looking at different people. Like, there are distinct eras of Jericho.
Yeah,
you can look back and see, like, he was completely different at this point than he was at another point. Another thing that happened in the match that I don't know if it was really obvious to other people, but I noticed Jericho is really good at remembering when he's supposed to be the bad guy. And a lot of so-called heels nowadays, like, if they hear the crowd cheering for them, they'll play up to that. But if Jericho hears the crowd cheering for him, he'll do something immediately to remind them, like, hey, you're supposed to be booing me. You're not supposed to cheer for me.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of a lost art nowadays.
Yeah, I agree. The STO through the table, that was pretty crazy. I mean, just for Jericho to be taking that bump at his age is, you know,
yeah,
he's earned his money at the very least. There was a really cool counter too, where he, like, countered the evil lariat into, like, a code breaker, which was I thought was a really, really cool counter. And then Evil, like, when he finally hit the STO in the ring after countering Jericho coming off the top rope, that was probably the best near fall of the match, because I was watching this unspoiled and I thought Evil was gonna pin him there for a second. So that was really, really, really good near fall. But yeah, I mean, I thought Evil looked good in defeat, so that's good. I mean, he looked strong and, you know, he hung there with Jericho. I just hope they follow up on it. I don't really know what he's going to be doing at the Dome. I mean, if it's him and Sonata winning the World Tag League again, that feels like a step back to me. But
it feels like a step back, but I also feel like the World Tag League, like, it's kind of there for the guys who need a match but have no other match to compete for.
Yeah.
Like, you had Maccabi and Homa win, like, was it like 3 years in a row? Like, who was asking for that?
Yeah. It was, I don't remember how many years it was exactly, but it was a bunch.
It was at least two.
Yeah.
Which is too many. They didn't need to win even once.
But yeah, that's the show overall. I like the show quite a bit, and you know, even though it was clearly like a treading water show from a storyline standpoint, but they, like, almost every power struggle is, honestly.
Yeah.
Although they didn't have any of those big moments like last year. Last year, power struggle had, you know, I think, did it have Switchblade's debut and Jericho's?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's a really...
I believe that show also had the Tanahashi Ibushi match.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly.
Yeah, that, which is awesome. Yeah. So it wasn't as good as last year's Power Struggle, which was a really, really good show. But it was still a good show here. And to me, just to, you know, it just focused around guys that I'm into more than, like, you know, Omega and Tanahashi. And, you know, I mean, that seems unfair to Tanahashi, but I love Tanahashi. He's just in a really stupid feud right now. So I can't really do anything about that.
I would say this show was fine in a bubble. Like, if you look at it on its own, it wasn't a bad show. But if you look at it as, like, progressing stories, it was kind of just there.
Yeah, which is a fair point. I mean, it didn't really do a lot for anything. I mean, you know, the end of the show, obviously Naito came out and saved Evil and set up the match with Jericho. But I think everybody on Earth knew that Jericho and Naito were going to wrestle each other at the Dome in some way, whether it's for the title or non-title. So I don't think that was really, like, it's tough to call that a big progression when you could see that coming 10 miles away.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, so let's see here. Before we get into the questions, let's look at the Tokyo Dome card real quick, since we have a bunch of matches for it now. First of all, the three-way for the junior tag titles, Katamaru and Desperado, or Punky 3K and Bushi and Shingo. can't believe we're doing this three-way again. But I assume Roppongi 3K is going to win here. It wouldn't surprise me if Bushi and Shingo won. I assume Kanemaru and Desperado have no chance, but I thought they had no chance, like, twice already, and they won retained both times, so who the fuck even knows?
Yeah, I think, like, kind of like, well, this is kind of like the story of Bushi's life in the junior division, where it's like he seems to always be getting the short end of the stick. Like, how many times has he lost to Kanemaru and Desperado? It's been, like, him and Hiromu had, like, two matches with them, I believe. And then he's having these matches with Shingo, and he's still losing. So it's like, if he doesn't win at this point, why do you keep putting him in these matches? I guess because he's a safe set pair of hands that you can put anybody in, and they'll have a decent match. But, like, at the same time, it's like, why do you keep putting him in these situations just to have him lose? It makes him look like a dork.
Yeah, that's very true. But yeah, I mean, I'm excited for the match, and that'll probably be pretty good. But, like, how excited can you be when it's the same match we just saw, you know? Speaking of matches I'm legitimately very excited for, probably my most anticipated match of the show, either this or the IC title, Kushida against Taiji Ishimori for the junior title. This could be, like, this to me is, like, the sleeper. Like, this could be, like, a five-star match, honestly. I mean, Taiji's been awesome in New Japan. He already had a five-star match with Hiromu. Kushida's Kushida. I mean, he always finds a way to come through in big spots, especially. I mean, this could be, like, really, really, really good.
Yeah, and I feel like this is a situation where no matter who wins, there's really one clear challenger I have in mind for either of them, and that's Hiromu. Because I feel like him coming back has to be a big deal, and he has to come back and win the belt. Otherwise, it just kind of feels like he was robbed, really.
Yeah.
Which he kind of was. He was robbed by injury, but to have him robbed again would be too much, I think.
But yeah, I totally, you know, I think that match could be maybe for, like, New Beginning, which would be, like, I mean, honestly, Hiromu versus either one, you could main event a New Beginning show with that if you wanted, for his return and everything. Like, that would be a big, big match. Okada versus Jay White. This to me is my wild card so far, where I like the build a lot. You know, I've really been into the build of this match. Will they deliver like a really, really good match in ring? I don't know. I didn't think the G1 match was that good. I think about like 3 3/4, which is, you know, a good match, but not like a classic or anything. So if they can really like deliver an awesome match here, I think that will go a long way towards shutting the Jay White critics up. I think they can pull it off. I guess we'll have to see. But at the very least, it's been a fun feud, which is more than I can say for the main event.
Mm-hmm. I actually really liked their G1 match, which is, I mean, obviously, because, you know, aside from being the number one evil stan, I am also known as a Jay White enthusiast.
That's true.
So I'm not gonna diss my boy. But at the same time, like, I thought that match, like, they don't necessarily gel together, like, perfectly. But I think, like, part of the problem is their styles. If you really look at Jay White and Okada, like, side by side, their styles are very similar to each other.
Yeah.
And I think that they're so similar that sometimes it's just, like, two birds crashing into each other. Like, it looks cool for a hot second, and then you realize you just watched two birds crash into each other, and they're probably both dead now.
But we'll see for the match. I'm cautiously optimistic, let's say. That's what I'm going to say for that.
I think it will be a decent match. I don't foresee it being bad by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, I agree. I just, like, if it can get to, like, a really, really awesome match, that'll go a long way towards making this, like, a very good show. So we'll see. Then the IC title match, Jericho Naito, like, of all this card, this is the one I feel most confident in, just because they had a really awesome match at Dominion. And, you know, I'm sure they'll come up big again. I mean, there's really no reason why they won't.
Of course.
Yep. And in the main event, the IWGP Heavyweight title, Kenny Omega versus Hiroshi Tanahashi. All I can say is, I hope to God Tanahashi wins. Kenny, I hope you go to NXT, buddy. I've had enough.
Honestly, I think Kenny's done like all he can do in New Japan, and at this point I think he knows it, and that's why he's sort of like treading water.
Yeah. I mean the last 6 months in general with the Elite guys, it's just like, I understand your contracts, whoop-de-doo. It just feels like the entire promotion is treading water waiting for these fuckers, and it's just ugh.
Yeah. And the other thing is, like, I hate to say it, but I don't see this match really being any good.
Like, well, you're the one who said it there. Wow. Yeah. I don't know if I even get that.
Not to bag on Tanahashi at all, because I think he's a great wrestler. But, like, a lot of his matches to me just, like, they start out really hot, but for some reason they just sort of fizzle out past a certain point. Especially when he's going up against guys that are, like, younger than him. Like, when he's going up against guys that are, like, established guys, it'll still be a fun match. But, like, for example, his matches with Jay, where it's, like, once again, I don't want to diss my boy, but they were not great. Like, they were all right, but it's just, they sort of fizzled out.
I like the G1 better than the Tokyo Dome, but, yeah. I've been going back and forth on this with the match quality. Do you remember the matches in 2016? Because I was trying to, like, the Omega Tanahashi. They only had one, I guess, right? For the IC title? Where Omega beat Tanahashi for the vacant. I'm going to look this up because I'm curious.
Like, my brain is like, I'm trying to, like, go back in my memory banks. And it's like, I feel like I've just wiped that from my memory. And there has to have been some sort of good reason for that.
There was, I definitely remember the one where it was a New Beginning, and Tanahashi, you know, Nakamura had vacated the IC title, and Omega beat Tanahashi at New Beginning to win the vacant title. What the fuck? Really? No matches were found? I know they have fought each other. What are you talking about? Cage match. Okay, there we go. Yeah, but it's just the one. So Kenny Omega beat Hiroshi Tanahashi in 29-10. On February 14th, 2016, the New Beginning in Niigata. I really have no memory of that match at all.
Yeah, it's like, I know it happened. Like, I knew what you were talking about, but at the same time, it's like, I know it's a thing that happened, but could I tell you what it was like? No.
I can tell you, according to Cage Match, Dave Meltzer gave it 4 3/4. So I guess I shouldn't be surprised when I had Kenny.
That was sort of the beginning of him giving pretty much any match Kenny was in a baseline of 4 stars. So
I would say a baseline like 4.5, honestly. Yeah. Like the Meltzer Kenny scale at this point is like 4.5 is okay. Anything below 4.5 is garbage. Like 4.25 is garbage. Anything good is 4.75. 5 stars is like great. And then anything above 5 is like awesome. But yeah, so I don't remember this match at all. Maybe it'd be interesting to go back and watch. On the other hand, it's 29 minutes long, so I don't know if I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
So what happened is they were supposed to have another one. I think it was supposed to be a ladder match, and Tanahashi got injured, and they had to yank him. So it ended up being Kenny and Elgin in that ladder match instead, which, again, I barely remember. But
with reason.
I know some people really hate that match, and I'm just like, every time it comes up, I try to think about it, like, did I hate it? I don't remember if I hated it or not. But yeah, I was very down in Japan 2016 in general. It was not a year for them I was into, really. So maybe I just wasn't paying great attention. But yes, so Kenny and Tanahashi, the first meeting since then. I mean, look, Kenny has had some matches this year that I really, really liked.
Kenny is not a bad wrestler at all, but there are some people where it's like he'll have fantastic matches with, and there's other people where it's just like, okay.
Yeah. No, I definitely hear you. I mean, like, I was going to say, in the G1, he had a really awesome match with Naito. You know, he had a really awesome match with Ishii, but then he had a really disappointing match with Ishii when he defended the title against him. And, you know, I did like the Okada match, even though I know some people did not. But yeah, I mean, he also had, like, some of those other G1 matches were so fucking terrible. And especially like some of the ones I saw get hyped, like the Zach match, the Sonata match, the Juice match, just not good. And
I think Kenny's had like great matches. Like I would say he was better last year than he was this year, which is weird.
I would agree, probably. I'd have to really think about it, but that's probably true. But yeah, I mean, like, so I don't know what to make of this, is what I'm saying. Like, I know I really hate the build. That I can tell you right away that I think the build is really stupid. I hate all that work shoot crap. I don't know what to make of the actual match. It just we don't have a lot of examples of these two together to see what kind of chemistry they have. To a degree, I want to say I have faith in Tanahashi to pull something out in a Tokyo Dome main event. To a same degree, I want to say like Kenny Omega has just been like, I haven't seen him do anything I've liked since I guess the Ishii G1 match. So he's on quite the negative run with me right now. But yeah, I mean, like, you know, even the Ibushi G1 match, I found it to be a pretty massive disappointment.
If I had to think back to the last Kenny Omega match I watched and thought this was a good match, it will have been, and this was like quite some time ago, if we really think about it. It was when he defended the U.S. title against Trent Barrett.
That is a long time.
That was a long time ago. That was at least a year ago now.
Yeah.
And that was like the last match where I really watched it and thought it was good. So something's just telling me that it's not going to be bad, but it's not going to be one to write home about either.
Well, I guess we'll see. It's going to be an interesting one. I can't say I'm looking forward to it because I'm not, but I'm like intellectually curious, let's say, about the quality. So we'll see how it turns out. But do you have any predictions? Is Kenny going to leave? Is he going to stay?
Part of me hopes he does leave, mostly just because I want to see him. I don't like wish him bad or anything like that. I want him to do well, but things I want him to do well elsewhere, because I feel like he's got a problem where he'll stay at a promotion for so long that it's like he sees no way forward. People booking him see no way forward, and it's just he ends up stuck in a rut, and I feel like he's been stuck in a rut for the past year.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it's time for him to go somewhere else.
I totally agree that it feels like he's done what he can in this promotion and probably is time to move on. I don't think he will, though. It's the thing. My predictions, I think he's just going to stay, unfortunately. But I hope he goes. I mean, that's where I'm at with him right now.
The thing is, I don't necessarily hope he goes to WWE. I think it's time for him to maybe go back out on the independent scene and do something like that.
Yeah.
But I actually genuinely thought he had a much better case of being the greatest wrestler out back when he was still doing independent matches against people like Mia Yim, 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, that's a good point. But yeah, I don't know. If he went to Ring of Honor, even like he could like single handedly bring that promotion to a greater relevance if he stayed the entire year there.
Yeah,
you know. So I don't know. I mean, I think they should do something, you know, and give it a different, you know, get like just do something different, and you know, let's shake things up. I think New Japan needs a little shake up too, anyway. So, you know, I think it would help all around, but who knows? All right. So let's get into some questions here. We did get a few questions. First of all, at LUTang_secret, do you think the 2018 Bullet Club breakup was ever a planned storyline by Gato? I mean, clearly it was a storyline, like as that was going to end with the Elite just dropping out a boat. No, I don't think that was planned. I think that's just kind of how it ended up happening. And I saw people on Twitter basically say, like, the Elite sandbagged the angle, you know, and if they were a little more interested in really, like there's no good reason why it couldn't have ended in a 5-on-5 elimination tag at King of Pro Wrestling or Power Struggle or something. Like, there's no, like, there should have been a match for the name rights. Like, if you're really booking this out and doing it correctly. So I don't know who I blame for this. I mean, Gato probably deserves some blame. But I think the Elite guys deserve just as much blame. I think they sandbagged the angle.
I think, like, this whole angle was kind of stupid. Because it's like, I feel like the Elite should have left the Bullet Club a long time ago. It shouldn't have had to come to a civil war. Like, they should have just left. Mm. Because they were essentially their own unit to begin with. And it's like, if you have a group, but that group has its own separate sides, then you're not really a group. So why are you still together? It's like a bad marriage.
It is kind of like a bad marriage, which actually transitions great into the next question. Kato Potato says, please give reactions. And it's a picture of a tweet that says, Ibushi is in a loveless marriage. Kenneth said he could make it work again, but he's back to siphoning their savings into startup projects with silly names with his old co-workers that do lean.
The Young Bucks for sure do lean.
What's your reaction?
My reaction is that the co-workers who do lean are for sure the Young Bucks. I don't know if both of them would do lean. I think like Matt would still do lean, and Nick used to do lean, but he got off of it, and now he like smokes a lot of weed.
But yeah, I mean, like, yeah, that's pretty much it, right? I mean, poor Kota is practically giving these eyes in his all of his post-show promos that are like, please save me.
Like, that's and he's like, please let me out.
I want to go do backflips in samurai gear again. Like, get me the fuck away from this man. Okay. At Tokugawa, there's a little involved. Let's say, if you had the book but had to keep the current champions, what would your Wrestle Kingdom card look like?
I'm not a big fan on Wrestle Kingdom having rematches for titles, but I'd give Evil his rematch because I feel like he's got more of a bone to pick and more reason to want the belt than Naito does. That's like the one thing that immediately leapt out into my brain. Well, that, and I'd also have the junior tag match be just a straight up match between Desperado and Kanemaru and Shingo and Bushi. Like, I wouldn't have Roppongi 3K in it at all because I just feel like they're not needed at a main event level right now. Other than that, I can't really think of anything else.
What you just said, I would definitely agree with you with the junior tag title match. I would definitely go with the Kanemaru and Desperado against the Shingo and Bushi. For heavyweight title, I would do Omega Naito. And I have Naito win. It's a very easy answer for me. I mean, I love Omega Naito matches. I think they've all been great. And obviously, I want Naito to win the title. So, easy. IC title, I would do Jericho versus Minoru Suzuki. It's like a match I have no idea what that match would be. And I would really like to see it. So, I would do Jericho and Minoru Suzuki. I think that'd be incredible. I mean, I don't know what it would be. I mean, it could be terrible, but I think it would just be so interesting to say that I would love to see that match. Junior title, I keep exactly the same, honestly. I think Kushida Ishimori is an awesome match, first time match, or actually, I guess they had a match during the Super J Cup, but first time in a while. Yeah, I think it could be really good. Never title, I guess. I guess Goto Ibushi might be the plan anyway, but that could be a good, really good match. So I might go with that. And then I don't know for the heavyweight tag titles, I guess maybe Evil and Sonata, and then the 6-man tag titles. I mean, who gives a shit about those belts, honestly? So there you go. Let's see. Next question here. Okay. At KODPT, who should take the number from Goto and how soon? Any thoughts on this?
Well, I think it should have never left Taichi. That's my first thing.
Back to Taichi.
I would prefer it to go back to Taichi, but at the same time, I don't want them to ever have a match again, at least, or at least for like a good 6 months.
I'm going back to Taichi, so that's my pick. At Anwar Starwind, will Show versus Shingo main event a Best of Super Junior show next year, or will Shingo be heavyweight before that? I think they will get one Best of Super Junior out of Shingo at before they ever turn him heavyweight, at least.
Yeah.
So I think that will be a main event, probably. And that'll be an incredible main event, honestly. I can't wait for that.
Yeah, I think, well, it's sort of, I don't want to say it's clear, but it does seem like Shingo's really only a junior as a placeholder for Hiromu, even though he is like a deceptively small guy. Like, I don't think people realize he's actually like really short. He's just wide.
Yeah.
But I think they'll at least have him do one Best of Super Juniors before he goes heavyweight. Because I feel like that's like a tradition. If a guy comes in as a junior heavyweight, he's got to have at least one Best of Super Juniors before he goes heavyweight.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it would be, I mean, honestly, I mean, that the Best of Super Junior was pretty awesome this year. Can you, like, next year you add Shingo to that? That's going to be, like, incredible.
Yeah, there's a lot of potential great matches in there.
Yeah. So I hope they, I mean, they, you know, not that Shingo won't be great as a heavyweight too, but like, it's so, you don't have to rush everything. I mean, you can let it breathe a little bit, you know?
Yeah, and Shingo's kind of used to working a junior heavyweight style because really everyone, well, just about everyone in Dragon Gate works a predominantly junior style.
Yeah.
They're a very lucha-based promotion.
Yeah. So there you go. We're in agreement. Let Shingo stay junior through BOS Gen. I think he probably will. But all right, so that's all the questions we have. Thank you. As always, we send them in. If you want to send in questions, we always take them on our Twitter account, which is at WrestleOmakase, not wrestling. The wrestling would not fit. Jasmine, thank you for coming on. Had a great time. And, you know, definitely have you back on in the future. Do you want to plug anything? I know you mentioned your blog before that you've updated once. And also, your Twitter account.
Yes, thank you for having me. You know, everybody can follow me on Twitter at Big Sad Boy. That's boy with two I's instead of Y. I do also have a Wrestling with History blog. It's wrestle_history on Twitter. I'll get around to updating it again at some point. I promise I will. But I do have an entire blog post about basically why the not-so-fabulous Moolah was a piece of shit. And I'll say some of my finer work there. So, you know, be sure to check that out.
Yeah, I did read that post. It was really good. So definitely check that out if you have time. Folks, thank you as always for listening. I don't know what next week's episode is going to be. Usually before I plug it, but I don't have anything planned yet for next week. So, of course, follow us on Twitter and I will let you know as soon as I do have a plan. I have a couple, like, ideas, but I haven't finalized anything. And after next week, though, we'll be getting into our year in review series, which is always an exciting time here at Omakase. So stay tuned for that. And award ballots have gone out. So, of course, all the Omakase guests have their award ballots for 2018. So that's always exciting. I've gotten like 4 of them back already, which is like crazy. Like, I thought I was sending them out way too early, and like 4 people just like, nah, I've already seen all the wrestling I'm going to see this year. Apparently, here you go.
I was going to wait at least until like the beginning of December before I did anything.
Yeah. I mean, I don't blame you. That's what I'm probably going to do too, but I just wanted to like get them out really early just to get them out. I didn't actually think people were going to do them already, but well, it's cool. I know 2 people picked Crown Jewel for worst show before it happened, which I thought was really funny.
And they were right.
They were apparently right from what I've heard. All right. Thank you again for coming on, Jasmine.
Thanks for having me.
And folks, we will see you next week. Thank you as always for listening. Goodbye.
Here it comes again, lunch. Will it be the same old, same old? Or are you ready to take a vacation from the ordinary with the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub at Firehouse Subs? Freshly sliced smoked turkey breast, craveably sweet mustard sauce, and a hint of Caribbean seasoning. Just $5.55 for a medium. Save time. Order the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub on the Firehouse Subs app. Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs. Save more lives. Participating locations, limited time only, plus tax. Prices may vary for delivery.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.